Well, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR and in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge, watching us on the PCTV Select app, and of course on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning, and Friday, May 1st already. Here we are, beginning of the month, right in the middle of spring. Glad to have you with us here this morning. Kind of a nice sunny morning we're getting out there right now, a little chilly, but not bad. We'll hear the weather forecast in just a moment. Nadia Milleron is my guest. She's an independent running for Congress and in the 1st Massachusetts District, or 1st Congressional District of Massachusetts. She's going to be my guest here for the full hour this morning. Going to talk about running for Congress and her campaign points and what's happening these days in the country and why she's running. So we're going to talk about all that and more. First of all, let's get to that weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Near steady temperature in the upper 30s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 50s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Friday night, partly cloudy with a chance of showers in the evening. Then mostly cloudy with showers likely after midnight. Lows in the upper 30s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming south after midnight. Chance of rain 70%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. And I know that we will be having a little bit of a warm-up, but some rain also. That's what I'm hearing over the long term. It is what it is. In springtime, we will get there. We'll feel like summer soon enough. We won't want to rush that. Actually, some of these days are the nice days, aren't they? I think was it William Shatner was once famously asked, describe a perfect date. And William Shatner went on to say, well, April 25th. He said, it's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's kind of nice, you know. So maybe that's what we should all be thinking about. This time of the year is actually pretty nice. All right. Welcome to the show. Nadia Milleron is my guest here this morning. Good morning, Nadia, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you. I'm actually delighted to be here. This is such an incredible chance for our district to be a leader nationally. So we did this once before,
right?
In 2024, and now we can close the deal.
Well, I know I had you on as a guest during that campaign as well, and looking back at that experience, that first experience running for Congress, what are the kinds of things that stood out for you that time around?
I really came to understand why we have corruption in our system, because there are 770,000 human beings in each district, and you have to reach, about 500,000 voters. And so how do you do that? You need money. Look at our district. It's three different media markets. So
true,
we
right?
have the central media market, which was the only one I was able to afford because it had the most population in it. So I bought television advertising for that. It was about, for my media buy, it was about $100,000 per month. But if I was to try to get the Worcester, part of Worcester County that's in our district, then that's the Boston media market, and that doesn't really make sense to buy television there because, you're getting like 4% of the Boston media market
right.
with your money, and
but
then
you're
advertising. Yes. Same with Albany. Our district, our county, Berkshire County, is in the Albany media market. So you just come to understand like how difficult it is. It's like 2.5 hours drive from my house to the edge of the district, Oxford and Webster, Massachusetts in Worcester County. And so, it's overwhelming, right?
It's a long drive just driving from the north to the south of Berkshire County.
It's an overwhelming reality of all these human beings, spread out over 83 towns, depending on how you count. It could be counted 84 towns. So, you have to go to all the town meetings to get the voters. I mean, so money ends up being a big part of what it takes to reach the voter, and that's just a physical reality. Yeah. This is not a New York City district. This is not AOC's district. She can walk all over her district.
Even some of the representatives in the Boston area, for instance, right?
So when you look at...
They're paying Boston rates, but they're also reaching everybody they need to reach right there.
Exactly. And so you see Richard Neal, he's already a congressman. He's already working, you know, for 36 years since before the fall of the Berlin Wall. So he, you know, has developed a system with the Democratic Party where he gets money and then he reaches people and he can also do part of his job. But actually his job is cut in half because he has to raise money. So half of his day is actually in an office outside Capitol Hill, because he's not allowed to raise money on Capitol Hill, so he has to have this separate office, and he spends about half his time there raising money. And so it's just this...
it's a crazy system,
it's
right?
It's a system that we have to accept as voters, and we have to have public financing in the system, and we have to get corporate money out of our system, and we have to do that through law, you know, and we have to have term limits. So obviously Richard Neal is not for term limits. I don't believe there's any Democrat in the race that is for term limits. So basically the Democrats in this race, they fight each other. But I, as an independent, am aiming to change the system, the whole way that the system works. And because it is not working, it is not working for us. But
certainly it's an uphill battle, though, right? And I can imagine, like, if you were to win the seat, would it be different for you? You would be in that same system, and you would also have to sort of play that game with money to continue to represent the district, right?
I mean, no, because I'm an independent. So we have 30 independents across the country. That's an approximate number running for Congress. We are in Independent Candidates Network. We all have different political philosophies, different views, but we do agree on term limits, on getting corporate money out of politics. We agree on single subject bills. Everybody's heard of these omnibus bills, this Military Authorization Act. Right. They tuck everything in there. They tuck exemptions for Boeing for safety. Safety regulations are built, you know, they're created because people died. So people die, and then the FAA creates a safety regulation.
Right.
Boeing gets an exemption for that tucked into the Military Authorization Act, a place we didn't even know that it was showing up. You know, Schumer and the Four Corners, after the Military Authorization Act was passed in the House, they tucked the Boeing exemption to safety into the bill before it passed the Senate. You know, we never even were aware of that happening. I couldn't even believe that it was legal. So the corporate money in our system is poisoning our democracy. It's canceling our democracy. So if we get five independents elected to Congress, which is numerically possible, and I am one of those.
Are there independents right now in Congress that are
not in the House?
Not in the
House.
Only
in the Senate. And if I get the same human beings to come out and vote for me again, that voted for me last time, because this is a lower turnout election, I will be the first woman independent ever elected to the House.
Wow.
And our district can lead in that, because last time I ran, we had 335,000 independent voters in our district. Now we have 403,000. So the number is rising. We have one of the most largest percentage of independent voters in the country in our district. And our district can elect the first woman independent in Congress. And that is a hope for real structural change, because I can unite. You see, if
what do you attribute that to? What do you attribute having so many independents in our district, and that there's an increasing number, that people are jumping and going to that independent side rather than staying with the traditional party
structure? They're coming from the Democratic Party. So the number of enrolled Republicans has increased. A disillusionment. The parties, neither party, are addressing our fundamental needs. So because the Democratic Party originally was promising equity for the working person, and they are totally controlled by corporate money, and so they are not following that path. For example, Richard Neal has been pushed by John Larson, who's a representative from Connecticut, for years and years to bring Social Security payments up to the standard of living of today. So today, when you have your Social Security check, it does not pay for what it paid for 30 years ago.
I think everyone can identify with that.
Yes. And so, you know, the Democratic Party is supposed to stand up for that. Okay. Everybody, I think, is familiar with the Social Security Fairness Act, and that passed finally in December of 2024. That was where municipal employees did not get the amount of money that they paid into Social Security. So this is a robbery. This was a robbery that was happening for years and years.
So at some point they were working and making Social Security wages and putting the money away, but then became a municipal employee
deducted.
Or something. Right.
Their spouse or somebody, their spouse had a private pension. And so there was this draconian mathematical formula that took away their Social Security. And you had, like, most of those municipal employees that ended up living on into their retirement were women. 85% affected were women. And they were impoverished. People who were superintendent of schools, principals of their schools, ended up working at Walmart. Okay, so think of this. This is the mechanics of what's happening and the fact that the House is trying so hard to buck this system. And Richard Neal is a linchpin in this system. So Richard Neal is the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. Anything to do with Social Security has to go through his committee. So the House wanted to, for years and years, they had the Social Security Fairness Act in his committee, and he wouldn't put it through. He wouldn't get it, you know, move it through his committee. So the House did a discharge petition. They went around the Ways and Means Committee. So they got a vast majority of members of the House, Republican and Democrat, whose voters were suffering in their district. And they went around the Ways and Means Committee with a discharge petition, and they overwhelmingly passed the Social Security Fairness Act. And then it was
so
to come to the Senate.
So that wouldn't have passed if it wasn't for a discharge petition.
Exactly.
That's why they used it.
That's basically
a method they can use to sidetrack things.
Yes, but it's very tough to do it. And we are not getting Medicare for all. I mean, we're not. There are so many, so much legislation that could help us that is not being passed through. This is an example of something that was successful. It went to the Senate. There were 72 votes in the Senate for it, but Chuck Schumer wasn't bringing it to the floor. We brought a delegation from Berkshire County. We packed Chuck Schumer's office with 30 people. We had USA Today with us. This is in December of 2024. This is after my election. And we said to him, we see you, Chuck Schumer. You are saying that you don't have time, remaining time in the Senate to bring this legislation, but you are bringing legislation to sanction universities that are having protests. And that doesn't affect the 3 million people that need a fair Social Security, that should not be have their Social Security that they've already earned stolen from them. And you have the votes in the Senate, and we see you. It's not because you're trying to reserve this time for Biden's judges. You are bringing other legislation, and we can see it, and we put it in USA Today. And then the next day, he brought it to a vote on the floor of the Senate only because of pressure. It was so much pressure exerted nationally by firefighters, by police officers, by teachers' unions. There was pressure exerted for 15 years to get this legislation through. And then our small delegation from Massachusetts was able to strategically pressure him and call him out in a national paper. And then the next day, it was brought to the floor. And, you know, Chuck Schumer, for all of his corporate takeover, you know, he is skilled. And so the appropriately named Senator Crapo from Idaho and
sure that's how you pronounce
Senator
the name, but
Cruz, they tried to filibuster this in a procedural way. They tried to stop this legislation from going through by throwing in all kinds of procedural problems in front of it. And Senator Schumer navigated around that and got it through. And there were definitely the votes there to do that. But, you know, none of these people will take these actions unless we pressure them. And if we
I think that's been the lesson, right, of this last 10 years or so of American history, is that bad things will happen and bad people will try and do bad things.
But on this
and it does seem that that people can make a difference by adding that pressure, by making change and by standing up and showing out, right?
Yes, definitely. And on this May Day, I'm here in your studio about this hope. If we get five independents elected, we can deny Republicans and Democrats a majority in the House, and we can force votes. That means we can say we are withholding our vote for leadership until you bring Medicare for All to a vote. And by doing that, it's not to say that we are going to be able to pass initially Medicare for All. What we're going to do is call out all of those representatives who have it on their website, I support Medicare for All. We're going to call them out. They're not going to vote for it. Everyone's going to see it. Also, term limits. You know, we can get term limits not through law, because the Constitution, the Supreme Court said that we can't do that, but we can do it through the rules of the House. So, for example, the House has rules that I have to show all my ethics, you know, information about everything I earn and all of my finances. That's all through the rules of the House. So the House has tremendous power by saying you can come in here or you can't come in here according to our rules of our organization. And so we can say, no, we're withholding our votes for leadership until the House votes for term limits through their rules. And if people don't vote for that, we are going to see them.
What kind of term limits would you be in favor of? Would it be a single term, two terms? What kinds of limits are you looking for?
Ideally, but we can't, you know, it's very hard mountain to climb to change the Constitution. There should be two terms of 4 years each for the House, but that isn't.
Because the House currently serves 2 years, so it would change.
Yeah, it's not practical to do that. Yeah. We can't change the Constitution. It would be very tough to do that. And so we could have three terms of 2 years each. Three terms of 2 years each. And that gives someone a chance to get their sea legs. That gives someone a chance to get some work done and train up the next person. Because that's where Richard Neal and all these people have gone wrong, is that they have just maintain their own hegemony over their own office, but they haven't trained up anyone else in their district.
There is some argument that says with term limits, though, that if you do term limit the elected officials, what you're doing is you're transferring the power to other non-elected people, like the staff people, the people that then have all the institutional knowledge and can navigate and move power through the system. Would that cause a problem?
We have to change this model. So the power should be in the people. How do we get Medicare for All? Human beings have to exert pressure, like the pressure I talked about in Schumer's office, of people from Western Massachusetts going down and being in Schumer's office and calling him out. It has to be through direct action, direct participation. And that is what I want to change in the office. You know, it isn't a power of the representative versus the staff. It's the representative connected with the human beings in the district and exerting that power.
But certainly there is power in Washington, and a lot of it is due to money. A lot of it is due to lobbyists, right? The money that's coming in is dark money in a lot of ways. It's PAC money. It's super PAC money. It's stuff that, you know, the decisions at the 11th hour are made, and people turn their heads and say, how did that happen? And suddenly it's like something that everyone supported that was perfectly popular that should have gone through. Suddenly it's like, oh, didn't work. Didn't happen. And it's mysterious, right? And a lot of that is probably due to the Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court, which, again, is set precedent. And the way the Supreme Court is going right now, it doesn't look like that's going backward anytime soon. So how do you fight against that that pressure of knowing that money in politics is going to be this huge obstacle to get
one
past.
Way is through the rules of the House. So yes, I understand about Citizens United, but the House can say no corporations can write these bills. Right now, that is what is happening. All the legislation is being written by corporations. You can say, no, that has to stop. Single subject bills. We have to have accountability for each person to see how they're voting. Right now they say, oh, I voted for the Military Authorization Act, but there was so much in there that I didn't agree with, but I had to vote for it because of this other aspect. No, we need to cut all of that out so that we can say this bill is about one topic, one subject, and we can see how you voted and you are accountable for that. Yeah. So having single subject bills is really important.
It seems ideal, though, right? I mean, how does that work practically? Because, you know, it's the making of the sausage, right? You get in there and that's what happens. The bills get attached together. You get the poison pills.
No,
things, right, that you get rolled all together and you say, well, this is your bill.
No,
you want to have your thing. You're going to have these other 14 things that other people want.
This is a mechanical reality and a rules reality that we can say we have to have a single subject. We cannot have an omnibus bill. We cannot have a Military Authorization Act bill. We cannot have these huge bills. This is something that we can do through the Rules Committee, and we can actually pass it if we get independents in there to deny Republicans and Democrats a majority. This election, my candidacy is about changing a toxic system, a toxic system where Republicans and Democrats are controlled completely by corporations. We need to have independent human beings. All of those independent candidates coming from totally different political viewpoints in Washington, libertarian, former Republicans, all kinds of people. I can work with those people, you know, and we can work together. The people that are controlled by corporations, they have to have a reality check. They have to have a pushback. And our district can start providing that because our district is so independent that we can elect an independent and we can start changing the political reality. And on this May Day, I challenge the voters to do that in favor of the working person.
Nadia Milleron is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. She's running for Congress for the 1st District in Massachusetts. That election is this November. If you're not paying attention yet, I'm sure you'll hear a lot more about that as we get forward. Most of the time in the national news, they call it the midterm elections, and usually that is a term, I think, that denotes the fact that it's a mid-president's term. But a lot of things are happening at the congressional level as well. And, of course, that's where all of the congressional seats are up for grabs, and I think about a third of the Senate seats. And, of course, there are what we consider safe districts, right? That's something that we're sort of indoctrinated to know now across the country, that you look around and you say there's 435 congressional seats, but really there's only X number of them that are in play, right? That could shift from Democrat to Republican, and you're here as an independent. So that's another whole scenario, right? Of potentially you have an independent that could win a seat and change the sort of climate there. There's right now, I think maybe what a 1 or 2 seat advantage to the Republicans. So they're holding on this very, very thin slice of power, right? Yeah. That they really have to keep every single one of their members voting on their side in order to move things forward. And I assume sometimes that just doesn't happen. If you mix an independent or two in there, what happens to the function of Congress?
Yeah, so you can get it to be much more functional and much more accountable. So that is where our district can start this revolutionary change in our political system. And up until Lincoln, we didn't have just two parties. We had numerous parties.
True.
And then the Republican Party came because of the Civil War, became stronger, and then there was a two-party system. But our founders said that the worst possible government that we could have would be a two-party system, because then it's always a spiral to the bottom, and there's no pressure ever to get any better.
Yeah, George Washington was famously against the party system, right? But that didn't last very long. It lasted while he was president, and pretty much right after that, we got two parties.
They said, No. We didn't have two parties until Lincoln.
Two of the strongest parties that sort of traded back and forth.
Right. But what I'm saying is you have to have other forces in there to keep the maybe two stronger parties honest or somewhat honest. Because if you don't have any force, then they have no reason to change. These people are not going to give us anything that we need without pressure.
Yeah.
And so independents, even though we may be a small group, can provide that pressure because of this close margin that you're talking about in Congress. And probably the Democrats will win the midterms elections, but it's so important to have that independent pressure on them because they have not been responsive either to us as an electorate.
Well, I think you've certainly chosen a year where pretty much everyone is fed up with what's going on in Washington, all right? I mean, I say that, and I'm pretty confident that most listeners listening to me right now would agree with that. They hate everything that's going on in Washington, from the president to the Congress to the Supreme Court. There's nothing going on in Washington right now that anyone appreciates, and it's affecting people in their daily lives. So you started out the conversation with what it was like to buy advertising in the media markets in the first district, which of course is the largest district that you have to represent in Massachusetts. How would a fundraising campaign that you would need to have running as an independent and not taking corporate money and not taking PAC money and sort of feeding into that corruption that everybody sees, what does a fundraising campaign look like for that?
Well, it has to, we have to reach out to every single person. Anyone who can give a dollar or $5 indicates that they are supportive of an independent candidacy. But unfortunately for me, and you know this story very well, but I'll just kind of go through it because I'm about to go to Chicago for 2 weeks.
And I wanted to ask you about that later in the show.
Yeah. And so, you know, there is this blood money that my daughter died in a new Boeing airplane. Mm. It was defectively produced and it was fraudulently certified by the FAA. There was a criminal trial against Boeing for deceiving the FAA, and the judge in Texas said that they were responsible for the deaths of 346 people. But despite that, because of prosecutorial discretion, which is a sacred thing in the United States because the prosecutor is part of the executive branch, and so the judicial branch does not interfere with what if a prosecutor wants to drop a case. So after 5 years of litigation, they made a deal with Boeing, and Boeing has to pay money to the families. We did appeal that deal to the Fifth Circuit, and we lost. So that money will be coming to the families, and I would spend part of that on my congressional campaign because I don't want to spend it for any of my own well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, it should be spent on the district where my daughter lived and that she loved. Yeah. And part of my campaign is training young people how to do this. I've been in Washington for 7 years now since the crash happened. Mm. And I have learned something about how to deal with the massive power of big corporations. When we're sitting in a hearing room, we watch Boeing coming out with the legislators from behind where we're not allowed to go. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Boeing is coming out from behind where the, I don't know, I'm trying to like transmit through the radio the power of this. Like they have access. And yet, because everybody flies and because these families, even foreign families, were in every office saying this plane is dangerous. Look at the pilot reports. Look at the current pilot reports. Look at the near misses. And then the side blew off a MAX, the Alaska Air, you know, and that was during the criminal proceedings. And Boeing violated their initial agreement with the DOJ. And so, you know, at that time, they had to. They were facing trial because of that violation, because they did not, they cut 2,500 inspections per airplane. Now, airplanes are put together by hand, not like cars. Cars are put together with robots. And so you must have those inspection points where you're looking to check to see. So they didn't have the inspection, and so they didn't check the bolts on the side of the airplane, and so the side blew off, and nobody died. Thank God, nobody died. But it stopped that.
Can you
case.
Imagine being on that plane, though? I mean, what a harrowing experience.
Horrible. Yeah. And the thing is that because Boeing has a lot, they cut all these inspections. Boeing's model is okay. We're violating the regulation. We're just going to pay the fines. Okay, fine. That's part of our business model. But the problem is that violating regulations written in blood means you're risking human life. And they were doing that when they were supposed to be a good defendant, right? They were supposed to. They weren't. The perpetrator wasn't supposed to keep on perpetrating against the, you know, the human beings that were basically flying on a coffin.
And there were two deadly fatal crashes of the 737 MAX.
Right. And so they
did
that.
In short order, within a few months.
Right. Yeah. But then ultimately, during the Trump administration, Pam Bondi decided to dismiss the charges against Boeing and make a deal with them. And, you know, we failed in our appeal.
And that's what I wanted to talk to you about later in the show, too, was sort of how federal regulation figures in an administration like we have now, where the whole idea really is to cut as much regulation as possible, right? Take a knife to it or a chainsaw, as Elon Musk once said, right? The whole point that they have is to get rid of it all. And yet here we have a very obvious situation where regulation is important. And if you don't have regulation in place, or if you're allowing corporations to do their own inspections or their own regulations or whatever, this is what you end up with.
It would work out great if we stuck with a capitalist system. A capitalist system, you create a product, which is a good product, which is functioning, mm-hmm. and then you sell your product and you're proud of it. That was initially Boeing.
And if you have a bad product, you go out of business.
Right.
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 That's the capitalist system.
What's happening now is that these bean counters, these executives in Boeing, are stuffing their pockets full of cash. So they're saying, okay, we're going to buy back our stock instead of using the money for the inspections, those inspection points on the plane. No, we're going to use that money to buy our own stock, artificially boost the stock price, get a bonus for all the executive, stuff our pockets full of cash, have a lower quality product, but we're just strip mining the company. Mm. And they are risking the company's existence. They are risking those jobs. They are making the planes less safe. Mm. And there has to be pushback against that, right? Because
and all we've seen over the last couple of years have been incident after incident in the air, which really makes people, I think, nervous about flying at all, which isn't good. And Nadia, we have to take our top of the hour break, so I want to continue this conversation right after the break. But you're listening to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Great conversation. Looking forward to speaking with Nadia Milleron. She's running for Congress in the 1st District in Massachusetts. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at santrini.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Raising children can be tough. You are not alone.
We have powerful resources right here in the Berkshires to help them thrive.
For elementary age children who have been impacted by family substance use, the Bright Futures Club builds coping skills and a strong community.
The Girls Unity Squad is for girls of color ages 5 to 11. We build confidence and empowerment through helping them explore who they can be.
Connect your child with support.
Visit sparkberkshires.org right now. That's sparkberkshires.org.
Hi, my name is Al Perlman, and I love jazz. Mostly jazz from the bebop and beyond period of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I also love sharing my passion for jazz from my extensive jazz vinyl collection with listeners here in Berkshire County. So please join me on Sundays at 8 p.m. for my show Jazz Collector Live on WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM,
Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge on the PCTV Select app, and on 1301 Access Pittsfield on the cable dial. We appreciate you being here this morning. It's May 1st, May Day, and you're on Morning Drive. Happy to have you here. I'm Sean Sayre. We are getting back to our conversation with Nadia Miller on in just a moment. One more listen and look at the weather forecast from the National Weather Service first, and we'll be right back to that. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Near steady temperature in the upper 30s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 50s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Friday night, partly cloudy with a chance of showers in the evening. Then mostly cloudy with showers likely after midnight. Lows in the upper 30s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming south after midnight. Chance of rain 70%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, we're back. And Morning Drive here returns on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Nadia Miller on. Good morning again, and thanks for joining me this morning. Nadia is running for Congress for the 1st District in Massachusetts, that long, big, huge district that includes Berkshire County and the Pioneer Valley and parts of Worcester County. And is that it? Are there more counties?
Yeah, so it's two big entire counties, which is Berkshire and Hampden County, part of Worcester County, and then three towns in Franklin County, and then the lower half of Hampshire County.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an L-shaped district with Berkshire County being the upright of the L, Hampden County and part of Worcester County being the leg, the other part of the L.
Yeah, so geographically a very challenging district to represent, as you mentioned in the first part. So we were talking about lots of things, money in politics, air safety, and lots of other things I want to talk about. But you had mentioned in the break that it is May Day. And that is traditionally a day across the world. It's more of like the world's Labor Day. We celebrate Labor Day in September, but May Day is more of the workers' day, right? What are your impressions about that today?
Okay, we have a power in the United States as consumers, as workers, as, you know, we have the power of our wallet, and we need to exert that. That's basically one of the only major powers we have left. So if you look, my kids were on humanitarian boats delivering aid to Gaza twice, once in October of this past year, 2025, and when they were being bombed by Israel. So Netanyahu sent a submarine, and he sent munitions that were produced in Pennsylvania, and they landed on those boats and could have killed somebody. They landed in Tunisia, a peaceful location, again in outside of Greece and Sicily. And so finally, the Italian population just had a general strike, a one-day general strike, and the whole country shut down. And everybody was stuck in traffic, and they couldn't go to their appointments or anything. And the reporters were interviewing them, and they're like, "No, it's for a good cause, you know, to stop the war in Palestine and also to help our people who are in the Mediterranean being bombed by Israel." And guess what happened? The bomb stopped, and 10 days later, there was a ceasefire in Gaza. So that is a
people
tremendous power.
Up,
we
right?
saw it again in Minneapolis when Minnesotans were trying to stop ICE from destroying their community. They stopped doing everything. They stopped their commerce. The whole thing shut down. And it was the commercial shutdown that had such a huge impact. Now, we have a strike today that's happening today on May Day. It's been organized by numerous people. It's building, right? So we're going to everybody's going to stop buying anything from a big corporation like Amazon or whatever today. And in many states and areas, school is dismissed. People are not going to school. People are not going to work in areas outside of our state. But we can participate in that. And then the next national strike, We can make it bigger and bigger and bigger. And those are all numerical. You can see the effect of that. Hmm. Believe me, the corporate structure will not tolerate that for very long. And it's tremendous leverage. And we need to exert that leverage. So
it's interesting because national strikes, general strikes, have not been sort of common in the United States, right? It's much more common in other parts of the world, Europe, especially Eastern Europe, places like that. And I wonder if a general strike here in the U.S., since it's not something that's sort of ingrained in what we do, would that have a backlash? Would people say, because of this, it's so much inconvenience, or I don't appreciate, you know, having to stop my entire life for whatever someone's cause is or whatever. And so therefore, I'm against whatever they're for.
No,
can you experience a backlash?
People are getting so squeezed. That would be the case if people had a little margin. Do you know, for this next generation of homeowners, it is more likely to have World War III than for them to be able to own a home? That is statistically true. And then, you know, people, rents have been increased by 30% during the last year nationally. You know, people are actually paying 30% of their income. You know, it's kind of interesting that's 30% in both of these statistics, but they're paying 30% of their income for rent. That means that they are rent burdened. Mm-hmm. That means that they can't pay the other things that they need for their children, for their families, their expenses, their food. They are underwater. So profits in the United States have gone up. Corporate profits, billionaires are making more money. Wages have remained flat. And it's an untenable situation in Berkshire County and Great Barrington.
And that was all before the war started on February 28th. And now
here we
are on May 1st and everything is going up and it's really shooting up like a rocket. So we've only seen, you know, the obvious things right now, the gas and the diesel and things like that. But it's really only a matter of time before those prices are reflected in everything we buy, everything that is shipped, everything, groceries, you name it.
So people are getting to the point where they are losing so much that going on a general strike is, you know, exerting that pressure, exerting that power as a collective is only going to help them. You know, they are so stressed. So if you think about it, somebody goes to work at Tractor Supply or Stop and Shop in Great Barrington. They have to have the three jobs in that area, also work at Dollar Tree. You know, none of those corporations will give them a full-time job. They don't get any kind of insurance, any kind of benefit. They can't even afford a car or a car insurance to get there. They have to get a ride. There's no public transportation. People are being so squeezed. They are on the margins of their existence. And, you know, we are increasing by letting all these corporate landlords come into our communities. Those corporate landlords evict their tenants at a much higher rate than the small landlords do. We have to draw the line here. And the most effective way of doing it is withholding our money. And it doesn't have to be forever. For example, if you are protesting today, if you are not spending corporate money today, you are going to buy gas tomorrow. You probably bought gas yesterday, but if you can avoid buying it today, it shows a numerical reality to corporate America that they are going to respond to.
As far as housing costs, and obviously the rising pain, I think, that people are feeling, and it's causing distress for people. You can see the numbers of unhoused and housing need people. What's the answer there? Is it building more housing? Is it incentivizing more housing? Is it rent control? Where do you fall on solutions for housing?
We have to have rent stabilization. We have to promote more smaller landlords. We cannot allow these corporate landlords to come into our communities and take over the housing stock because, like I said, they have a much higher rate of eviction. They raise rents at a much higher rate. And so if we don't have rent stabilization, which is going to be on the ballot, so it's a ballot initiative in Massachusetts. So we have to have that in order even to allow the smaller landlords to continue to exist. It's a smaller landlord-tenant relationship that saves our rental housing mm-hmm. situation.
Kind of like your typical duplex, for example, where you've got someone living next door and you're renting out the next side.
And there's compassion there. I mean, people mm-hmm. understand each other. Mm-hmm. People also are not...
It's the absentee landlords or the corporate landlords, the ones that are owning hundreds of properties, for example, and are never there and not maintaining their properties. I mean, that's sort of the theme that we hear and the image that we have. And is a lot of that true?
Yes, and it works both ways. Mm. So if you have a corporate landlord, the tenant is also not as responsible, right? Because mm-hmm. they don't have that involvement and they don't care and the price, their rent is just going up. And so in order to have community, you have to have people who know each other involved in these transactional relationships, which are healthy for the community. Mm-hmm. We are pricing out all of our workers. Mm-hmm. So how can you exist as a community without any people who can work in the community?
Right.
For example,
and that happens a lot in South Berkshire County.
Exactly.
Right?
And people cannot live there. They have to live in Canaan, mm-hmm. Connecticut, or New York, and they have to travel. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's the whole problem with car function and insurance and all that.
Yeah.
So people are being priced out of their existence. And it is in the face of billionaires continuing to make more and more money off them. So now there's this type payday type loans that are for paying your rent. So Assure or all these companies that have these nice sounding names, well, they are going to lend you money to pay your rent at 167%. So that is, you know, hasn't really hit our community. Yes, a poor person ends up paying more for each of the items they need in their life than someone with more stable income.
Right. And you mentioned transportation, and there are reports recently that more and more people are taking, you know, 7-year loans on cars and rolling in the debt from the last car to the next loan. And sort of that's that cycle of indebtedness where you'll never actually recover from it. And that those are just symptoms, right, of what's happening right now. But back to housing just for a minute. I talked about incentivizing building of housing and housing units because we live in an area here where we're kind of stuck with some very old housing stock. A big percentage of what we have was built before, let's say, 1940, and maybe 40 to 1970 or so. Some of that is in poor condition. There isn't enough housing stock, so that, by supply and demand, is pushing some of that, the rent up and the prices for houses and things like that. So how do you go about incentivizing the building of more housing units and also navigating all of the different zoning regulations that all these cities and towns seem to have?
Nationally, we have built in the last few years more housing than we need. So
not around here, though.
Not around here, but nationally we have.
Certainly, and we don't see in the South and the West, that seems to be true, but we haven't been busy doing that.
Yeah, we don't see rents going down. People have to be able to have a path for ownership. So we have these buildings. They need to be, we have to have creative financing for people to be able to rehab them and then buy into those buildings. Mm-hmm. And so HUD does not work for getting people to be more independent, have home ownership. Those systems are just don't work. Mm. And so we have to sort of have creative mechanisms to take existing structures and make them into housing and, you know, so that and people can buy into and have that pathway forward.
Yeah, it seems like, and this administration has been very critical of many of the sort of departments and bureaucracies in the government and wanting to get in and sort of blow them up and say, you know, housing doesn't work. Let's change everything. And, you know, I think of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. coming into Health and Human Services and, you know, just killing everything, everything that does work. It doesn't seem like science or evidence really matters anymore, right? But that's something that if you were to be elected to Congress, you would also have to deal with some of that trend. Or what side of that do you think you fall on? Do you want to blow things up and fix them from the ground up, or do you want to work within the systems that are there now?
When you blow things up and they have already been blown up, you have an opportunity to create systems which work better for human beings. Mm. And so I think that's where we're at. There are very creative nonprofits in Berkshire County, certainly, that are trying to do this rehab and ownership pathways for people. Mm. And so I think we need to take advantage. I don't think that HUD did serve. They kept people in a in a stuck position economically. And so I think we need to have ownership pathways, and we can develop those for our own people. I believe in local control. So I think that some of these big federal organizations did not actually serve and sometimes just totally ignored the realities on the ground.
But then if you don't have some sort of centralized regulation, some sort of federal regulation authority, you then sort of get a patchwork, right, of different rules and regulations for based on where your zip code is.
Again,
and so that isn't always that great either.
Again,
right?
Local control. So federal money, taxing the rich, you know, the billionaires, you know, people are actually not paying their taxes. These big corporations are not paying their taxes. So I don't want the middle guy to be audited or whatever. I think that these huge corporations that are not paying their taxes need to be called to task and they need to pay. And with that money, we need to give local control and local solutions to places like Pittsfield where they can develop these ownership pathways and strengthen the human beings who live here. Because if you don't help people have an economic way forward, then you just have this population that needs medical care, emergency care all the time. And it's very expensive for our communities to have people that are fundamentally unsupported.
Yeah.
So I think we can go forward with the destruction that has happened federally. I think we can actually go forward and build something better for our communities.
It seems like there's a lot of repair work ahead, no matter what happens in the next few years.
But it could be good repair work. We need to have proper zoning so that we can have housing on Main Street. We can have, you know, right now we have such restrictive zoning that doesn't allow for some creative solutions. So we need to take back that look at, assess the situation on the ground and take local control back.
Yeah. Nadia Milleron is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. She's a candidate for Congress for the 1st District here in Massachusetts, which, of course, includes Berkshire County. Other parts of your campaign right now, you talk a lot about food, local food, and healthy food. So, again, you know, I just brought up RFK Jr. I don't know how you know, you feel about what he has done. And there's this big movement, the MAHA movement, Make America Healthy Again. It seems a little shammy to me, just my guess. But how do you feel about that movement and moving forward with a healthier food supply?
RFK has made some real wins getting corporate adulterated products that are dangerous for you in vaccines and other areas, you know, out of our products. That is not to say that I've done a full assessment of, you know, what he's done right and what he's done wrong, because I think that there's a lot of propaganda on both sides. I don't think it's kind of interesting to me. My uncle is Ralph Nader, and I talked to him about the healthy food movement that RFK is pushing forward. He does not want to say that anything RFK does is good. You know, he just ideologically is just like anything to do with Trump, anything to do with RFK is just bad. But it is true that getting more human beings to eat healthier and not to have medicines which are adulterated with dangerous substances in the medicine, that is important.
Well, so I'm sensing that you're not a fan of vaccines.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. No,
okay.
All my children are vaccinated.
Okay.
No, it's not to say that at all. I just don't think that there should be toxic substances in the vaccine that doesn't serve the purpose of the vaccine that could actually hurt the health of the person taking the vaccine.
But the vaccines that we all take has been proven through science to be safe and effective, right? I mean, that's the FDA wouldn't have approved them had they not. And we have 60 years of evidence or more that the vaccines work and that they don't hurt people.
They do sometimes hurt. Okay, so there is a change in the content of the vaccine, which is a good change, in that dangerous substances which were in the vaccines are now being excluded. So I agree with you that vaccines are important, but I think it's important to think about what is in there that is not necessary for our health.
Yeah, I think in my personal opinion, if it's supported by science and by the evidence, I'm all for it. If it's someone who is claiming that vaccines cause autism, which has not been proven, you got to really ask yourself, Who's saying that, and why are they saying that? I think you really have to ask that question, right?
We have to look at the fact that autism has increased in our society and think about why that is.
Has it increased, though? Has the recognition of it increased?
In all Western societies, it's increased. So if you look
I think a lot
of
doctors will tell you that it's just that we're looking at it now and we recognize what it is.
So if you look at Finland on the border with Russia, there's a community there, and this is also true with the Amish and with Germany. These are communities that are genetically the same, but the autism on one side, the poorer side, is not as high as the autism on the richer side. And so I don't know. I can't tell you the answer for that. Yeah. But I think it's important to look at it before you support it,
right? I mean, you'd actually have to see scientific evidence to believe that that makes sense.
It's important to look at it.
Yeah, agreed.
And not to just swallow the pablum and not to just swallow the corporate statement that these are safe, these are safe, these are safe.
Is it a corporate statement, though, or is it scientific statement?
No,
it sounds like you want to fall down on the side that this is corporations pushing this stuff, where isn't it science that we want to rely on?
We want to rely on science, and a lot of what is purported science is corporate controlled. So we have to really look at these studies and who is funding them and what is kind of, we have to be critical.
Mm. Well, we have a measles outbreak in this country right now that is the greatest one that we've had in 60 years. And a lot of that is caused by people who are doubting whether those vaccines are safe and effective. So they're not giving them to their children, and they're hurting children. They're killing children by doing that.
Right. So take vaccines and insist that they be safer. Mm,
makes sense. Nadia Miller on. We've got about 5 minutes left here of the interview, and thank you so much for being here. It's a great, great discussion.
Farming, food.
Well, I was going to ask more about Medicare for All because you brought that up in the first half of the show. And again, that seems like, the white whale. Yesterday we were talking about Melville and Moby Dick. And so I'll bring that up again. Seems like we've been chasing that for a very long time in this country. And we have made slow progress toward that. And then every time it seems like it gets knocked back, the Affordable Care Act came in and then got chopped away at. And we're still there, but it's hanging on by a thread. Do we have an opportunity to bring Medicare for All, and what are the benefits there for society?
Okay, we spend more money on healthcare than any other country, and we don't have the best healthcare. So that is...
That's undeniable.
That's a numerical problem.
Right.
We, as Americans, we have to do direct action. So, for example, with Bay State, with any of these nonprofit hospitals, they have a charter. They have a mandate that they have to look out for the health of the people in their catchment area. To be lobbying actively in Boston against Medicare for All, that is against their charter. Mm. We need to go to those board meetings, stand outside like we did against Boeing. We stood outside of their meetings and said, hey, you guys are creating planes. You're not being careful in your production. You're creating, look at all these problems. Mm. You know, we got pressed there. That's what we have to do. And we have to demand Medicare for All.
Yeah.
So it is a
terrible system in so many ways right now for the patients, for the doctors, for the hospitals. It doesn't seem to be working for anyone, right? There's a story in the Berkshire Eagle today about the pressures that local EMS companies are facing. And they're asking for more money from their towns and cities because they're going to go out of business if they can't. We need ambulances, right? We need hospitals. We need primary care doctors, especially here in Berkshire County where things are very rural, that we're, limited by that.
Why are the hospitals advocating against Medicare for All? That is crazy and against the interest of their patients.
I assume because they think they'll lose money if it comes through, if they'll get paid less for the services
because
they're putting
through. Tied in with insurance companies. Mm. We need to eliminate the insurance company, have a single payer system like the VA or like Medicare that exists right now. And we have to insist on that. And we have to get out on the ground, not just saying no kings, these kind of rallies that are, we have to have specific demands and we have to demand health care for every person in the United States. It would take a tremendous burden off of our business community. Why should our businesses pay for this?
It would give them a certain amount of predictability and certainty if they knew that.
And also our talent. People wouldn't be stuck in their jobs if they could say, we could leave and we don't have to worry about insurance. We can go and start our own businesses. Yeah. We can go to a job that is a better fit for me and I don't have to worry about my health insurance. So this is stifling our economy, and it's the hospitals and insurance companies that are holding us back, and we have to absolutely get out there on the street and demand Medicare for all, health care for every person to relieve our economy and relieve our physical health.
Nadia Milleron, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being here this morning on May Day. Nadia Milleron, candidate for Congress here in the 1st District of Massachusetts. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, Sean.
And a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody. Glad to be here. And we will see you again next week on Morning Drive. Take care.